This is a special edition of Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley, and on our show today, we're exploring the Black experience in Athens from a wide array of perspectives. As we continue our special edition of Athens News Matters, we are now joined by representatives from area faith and nonprofit organizations. We have Life the Griot, a.k.a. Lemuel LaRoche, founder of Chess and Community, Reverend Dr. Daryl Bloodsaw from Ebenezer Baptist Church, and Mocha Jasmine Johnson, co-founder of the Athens Anti-Discrimination Movement and a candidate for the District 117 House seat. Thank you all for joining me today. I appreciate your taking the time. Let's start with what problems, whether they be spiritual or material, do you see Black Athenians facing today?
Where do you begin, right? I think when we say Black Athenians, we usually give these assumptions that all Black Athenians are experiencing the same things in Athens. But I think the reality is on the ground, it looks so different. We have so many different needs, so many issues, as well as so many great things happening in Clark County with Black Athenians. Some of the problems that I see now and what I see that potentially is going to come down the line is this issue of jobs, having access to resources, having access to a livable wage. Do I have enough to survive now and years to come? And especially with what we're seeing with the school, that's going to only compact the issue, because we're talking about it's easy for somebody to advocate that I can just move everything online and work from home and in a two-parent household. It's a whole different ballgame if you are a single parent that and you're a deemed essential worker, and now your child is not in school, and now you have to figure out how do you make sure you don't have babysitter money. So we can only see the issues are going to only compact. It's only going to get worse in some areas.
And Mocha, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I would definitely say the economic impacts. That is still a struggle for many Black Athenians with closing that wealth gap. You know, it's either you're at a poverty end, which is up to, I would say, depending on the statistics or where you look at the information, is 28% to 38%. Poverty rate within Athens, Clark County. That was an issue before COVID even hit. On top of that, the affordable housing is definitely an issue that needs to be addressed. If you live in an apartment complex or you're trying to find a place to live for you and your family, it's almost like there's no more affordable housing within the Athens area. You're being pushed out, even graduates or people that want to stay here compared to the jobs that are available and what they're paying. It doesn't match housing ability to be able to put food on your table, to be able to have a social life, and to be able to take care of your family. So those are things that I see that are ongoing issues. And then the third concern is always for me is the school to prison pipeline, the kids that are falling through the cracks, the graduate rates, the literacy problems that we're seeing starting from elementary level on up, and Black and brown children are still falling through the gaps within Athens, Clark County. So now let's move forward months from now, going into 2021. What is that going to look like for the youth? What are schools going to look like? What is the working class families going to look like? What are all these things going to look like for people that were already struggling and were already at jeopardy prior to COVID? So they're still dealing with certain issues that I think are only going to get worse over a period of time.
And let me stay with you on this one, Mocha. Obviously, this summer has brought a lot of racial issues to the forefront, and I wonder how you have been processing the news of the past few months with yourself, your family, and your communities.
I wonder if it's a trend or is it a true awakening that is going to spark transformative change where people are truly conscious about how they cause harm or how systematic racism causes harm and how that impacts the Black and brown community. Are they going to make substantive changes that would help us elevate over the long run, or is this just a trend? So that's how I've been looking at it, because, you know, people could say Black Lives Matters, and then You hear the counter protesters or the other side say all life matters. Then it becomes like a continuous battle going back and forth. Are majority of the people going to start to listen? Is this a true awakening or is this just a trend and will it fade? And I would say there's a large group of white Americans that have mobilized, that have shown, tried to show their unity. But at the same time, what are we going to do to really correct it and begin healing?
Dr. Bloodsaw, you're from here, but you have spent time in New York as a pastor before moving to Athens. I know Mocha and Life are also both transplants. Can you tell a difference in racial relationships outside of the American South, or do you see similarities all across the board?
Yes and yes. Yes, there is a difference, and yes, there are similarities. And I say that because racism is racism. It is structural, it is institutional, and because the basic fabric of this nation was born out of a racial caste system. So there are definitively some similarities, but there are also some differences. Difference in that it manifests itself in different ways. I would always tell people in New York, I was there for 25 years after I left UGA, and I would tell them, down south, it's a lot more overt. Meaning, in some cases, not all, there are just some lines of demarcation that you don't cross. However, up north, there may be somebody walking around in a business suit with a briefcase, people you may be sitting across from dinner with and having a semi-social conversation and have no earthly idea of who that person really is or how they receive you until you learn in the hard way. So certainly there are similarities because racism is racism, no matter how or where it shows up. But then there are some definitive differences in the way that it's manifest.
Life, I understand you work with children, obviously, at Chesson Community, and you are a parent, as are all three of you. What sort of unique struggles do you see Black children grappling with in this moment in time?
I would say in this moment, a lot of them are Zoom fatigue. A lot of people are really tired of just this online communication that we're having, and people are really looking forward to get back into face-to-face engagement. But just to tie that into the broader conversation with Dr. Bloodsaw and Mocha talked about this, you got this structural, and then you have this overt racial structure that's in place. And as that began to just kind of highlight itself around Athens, you see that more in, let's look at nonprofit structures, right? How many Black-led nonprofits have full capacity and are able to function? And to be fair, there are a lot of nonprofits that don't have capacity, that's not able to function. But when you look particularly at a lot of communities, brown and Black communities of color, you really don't see that ability with nonprofits having the capacity to really engage their communities as we need to versus, and the reasons behind that is a lot of people haven't developed that political network that's needed to get resources through various different hands. But like Dr. Bloodsaw, you know, points to, you have a lot of nonprofits, a lot of people in these communities that have been on the ground doing so much work for so many years who are not connected to the political class or to the funding class and not, but still have to find a way to manage and move organizations and move programs with little to no resources because they don't have that capital. So even, it's not as covert, but even overtly, how do we identify who gets what resources to impact what communities? When you look at places like EADC, you look at places like HCD, these structures that have been around Athens for 20 plus years and still not even in a position, at one point they used to be, but not in a position to really address the onslaught of what we are going to see, what we're seeing now, and what we're going to see with COVID-19. So those are some, you know, overt, and I don't think it's intentional. People are not saying we want to give this organization because it's white led, is ran by a white person, money versus this organization that's led by a black. It's more hidden in a sense of saying, well, do your organization have the capacity? No. And if your organization doesn't have the capacity, you don't get those resources. So what are we going to be put in place to help organizations build those capacities? So there's various levels of overt structural things that we see, and it's hard to quantify. It's hard to put a thumb on exactly what it is. But from the programming level, since the whole racial outrage that we're seeing, and people are really beginning to point to a lot of the structural racism, and I'm always mindful that we have youth that are also tuning in. So sometimes when I visit some of the parents' home and they're watching, you know, I mean, all the shootings, all the marching, all that, and the kids are sitting there watching it as well. And as we have our online activities and we have our healing circles and things that we begin to discuss, you can see that people are numb. People are just like, I just don't know what to feel anymore. Like, it's so much. And I get it, because as a father, as a husband, you know, I too have to deal with this. I too have to continue to eat that, to download that, to see all these things that we're seeing, and still have to make some type of sense to maintain my sanity and to create a space for the youth that and the families that we work with to have an outlet to release, to engage, to dialogue, and also create a space within my family so that way we can talk about these issues and not just leave with it deeply frustrated. So I've been having conversations with various different, you know, white friends and counterparts in Athens, and where nobody just know what to do. How do we address this? How do we talk about it? And I feel like it's too much. How do we talk about it? Because this is not something new. This is not something that we just like, are we going to assume that everybody, the veil just came off of everybody's eyes and everybody can see things clearly now? No, it's been here, right? So it's like, how did we get here? It's deeply structural. How do we change the structure? Do we have the capacity? Do we have the guts to really address it? We can remove symbols all day long, but are we going to actually go into the root and develop a pathway for upward mobility so that the next generation of Athenians have a ladder that they can climb out of poverty? Or are we just going to keep this thing, you know, symbolic, right? So there are so many layers to that, but at the very root of it, people are numbed. Like, you know, this whole conversation has been done with the school, and I can see how adults and teachers are saying, hey, look, this is not safe. But a lot of students I've talked to can't wait to get back to school because they're like, man, I'm bored. I need to see friends. I need to engage. I don't want to sit in front of this computer and talk all day long. And then the other aspect with the programming, we've had to include parents in our programming. So the parents are also taking part in the healing circles, in the yoga, in the book clubs. And these are things that we used to just do for the youth, but we're involving the parents in this process, and it helps, but at some aspects it also takes away, because how do we have those deeper dialogues if mama is in the next room? I can't talk about what I really want to talk about. So with a lot of nonprofits, we just had to make a lot of adjustments and challenges, but this is the post-COVID world that we are prepared for. So buckle up, let's go for it.
You know, it's interesting that I think so many students are going to have a deeper appreciation for actually going to school, because school is more than just formal education. You interact with peers, you learn social cues, there's a lot going on. We are out of time, but I do want to thank my guest, Mocha Jasmine Johnson, co-founder of the Athens Anti-Discrimination Movement and a candidate for the District 117 House seat, Life the Griot, a.k.a. Lemuel LaRoche, founder of Chesson Community, and the Reverend Daryl Bloodsaw from Ebenezer Baptist Church. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you so much for the invite.